La 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 la. Ooh la la la. Ooh la la la.
If you want to hear your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. They talk megabytes to petabytes and cover it all. They're the Gizmo.
Sapien show 113. I had to look at the screen for a minute there. I forgot what day it was. This is our first show of 2017. I'm way behind today.
Going back in time.
Yeah. Back to the future. No. And with me today, well, I'm Chris, and with me today is
Paul
and
Matt.
And we're going to, I guess, talk a little bit of politics, technology, and business, and whatever else we drift into. Did any of you guys make any resolutions for the new year?
No, I gave up on that a while back. I just never followed through anyway, so.
You never
figured I wouldn't let myself down.
I still like 1280 by 1024, so.
Oh. See, I'm thinking about 4K, so. No, I actually, you know, I had already started this 3 or 4 months before 2017, but continuing to get in a little bit better shape, lose a little more weight, grow back into some smaller clothes. That's about it. You know, I guess my resolutions are make more money, buy more technology, maybe buy a new truck and trailer this year. Who knows?
Nice.
Who knows? So, it's been interesting. You know, today is the 5th of January, so we are 15 days. That's right, 15 days before the Trump inauguration. And luckily, it's been so far that 2017 has been politically undramatic. Or low on the drama scale.
Well, he's a lame duck. What do you expect? I mean, he's going to do his silliness walking out the door, like handing himself medals and whatnot. But that's...
Yeah, did you see that? The Secretary of Defense giving him a medal, and the title of the article was Obama Awards Himself.
Yeah.
Some citizen medal thing.
Well, I think everybody realizes that he's a lame duck, so it's been very interesting to watch it play out. But, you know, I'm surprised. There haven't been very many presidential proclamations that the Congress and the new president have to undo it so far yet. I'm waiting. That shoe's got to drop, you know. But I don't know that there's going to be many pardons, because you can't pardon Snowden, you can't pardon Petraeus, and you can't pardon Clinton. Because all three of those will immediately cause tremendous issues. You pardon Petraeus, it means you have to pardon Snowden. You pardon Snowden, it means you have to pardon Petraeus. You pardon either of them, it means you have to pardon Clinton. And vice versa. I mean, it's a horrible...
And I said, let them all go to jail. If that's what it takes to get her in jail, then I'm okay with it.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, my point is that you pardon any one of them, you set precedent for the others to get out of whatever they did wrong. You know? And arguably...
So then why isn't there a precedent since Petraeus was prosecuted? Why isn't Hillary being prosecuted? That's, for me...
I totally agree.
The big question.
Well, I think what you're seeing, I mean, there's things that are happening. I just don't think they've necessarily gotten to the point where they have to be presidential or congressional or senatorial action as of yet. You know, there's a whole bunch of civil suits being filed. There's several federal lawsuits being filed, particularly around the Clinton Foundation. And all of those are related to... you know, the corruption issues and the email scandal of Hillary Clinton. So I think some of it's just taking care of itself in and of itself. You know?
You have a lot of faith
I don't have faith. I just, particularly when you start seeing civil lawsuits are all about greed. And you know, when civil lawsuits happen, there's not much you can do to buy yourself out of them. Because if people can find ways, particularly lawyers, to monetize that and get money out of it, they're going to do it.
Well, yeah.
And the civil lawsuits will make the rest, you know, the criminal lawsuits from the federal courts have to happen, because that will be the that will be how the appeals process on the civil lawsuit stops. I mean, it's a horrible way for it to work, but unfortunately it is. I mean, look at the way it, you know, I create show notes and I send them out, and they're not really show notes perspective of, like, we're going to talk about this, this, and this, but they're like articles I want people to read so that we can have these discussions. And so look at the way that, in order to avoid a filibuster, that Congress is going to repeal the Affordable Care Act, or in my case, what I call the Unaffordable Care Act. You know, and it's a three-step process that starts with a budget resolution that's based on some Congressional Budget Act of 1974 and this process that it sets up. But it allows the House to have a simple majority to vote to change and repeal almost all of the major issues, which will then force the rest of the Affordable Care Act to crumble in upon itself.
Well, I look forward to that implosion.
Oh, me too. Me too. You talk about soaring healthcare costs. Somebody wasn't watching what the left hand was doing when the right hand was doing it.
No, the left hand did all of that.
Oh, I agree.
Entirely on their own, with minor complicity by left-handed righties.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
You mean Kasich Prickly? But, you know, you're talking about, it's a three-step process with multiple steps in each process that Congress has to go through just to do this. And it's unfortunate that they have to resort to this to get something done correctly.
No, it's not unfortunate. It's completely expected.
Yeah.
I mean, they passed that bill into law without even reading it. There was no way anyone could have read it. A team of people couldn't have read it in the amount of time they had.
Yeah. Well, I think the expectation was that we know what the outcome will be. Even if a Democrat had gotten into the presidency on the 20th, because this is something that's happening now. They believe that the first two steps of this process will be done before the inauguration. So you're talking about something that's going to happen in the next 15 days. And if that happens, they believe that the whole thing will be repealed within the first 100 days, which is pretty big. But I think they figured that, okay, we're going to live with this. Whatever's in it, we're going to live with it for a couple of years. Because the first year, I think they all probably came to the consensus that the first year wasn't too bad.
Well, the first year wasn't too bad.
Yeah. Except for the website rollout.
Well, that aside, and that's still not fixed.
Yeah.
I don't think, as I recall, the bulk of the onerous regulation of that law didn't really come into effect until really just this last year.
Correct. But they knew that by the time, I think this is what they figured. I work.
There's no way.
Paul and I both work in the government space, and I actually work with the Congressional Budget Office. So you hear things when you're there, and even though I'm on the IT side of things, but you almost get the sense when you're in there that this was the expectation, and they knew that they were going to, this was the plan all along.
Oh, sure.
But let it go, and then we're going to repeal it. You know?
Well, I do think there are some politicians, at least. Now, I think the bureaucrats are another whole thing, but the politicians thought that they were going to get to this point and then try and fix it. I don't think there's any fixing to be fixed.
I don't believe there is. At least everything that's going on at this point is not about fixing. It is called, it's about repealing. Now, that being said, there, you know, the Republican Party, who's, you know, in charge of this whole process at the moment, has got to have something, not an Affordable Care Act in that nature, but they're going to have something that they're going to have to put together as a amelioration, because there will be some small minority of people who this will be really bad for. And unfortunately, right now, that's the way our politics and our legislation are leaning, is you have a minority group who is a corner case, you know, of how, you know, things going for them, and they're driving the ship for the majority.
But honestly, this comes down to, they call it the Affordable Care Act for a reason. It's because healthcare insurance was expensive. It's kind of supposed to be.
Yeah.
But the solution for it isn't to add on layers of bureaucracy that only increases the cost. You're supposed to reduce the burden on the consumer.
Yeah.
And the way to do that is to allow healthcare insurance to be purchased across state lines. There was tort reform was suggested. That's two things right there that would significantly impact the cost of healthcare insurance.
Yes, you're right. I mean, just simple things that they could do at the federal level, like one, and you know, the Affordable Care Act wasn't totally bad in some of its intentions, but the road to hell is paved with good intentions, as we always have been told. But, you know, insurance companies should not be able to deny based on pre-existing conditions. That should just be a law.
And why it isn't, it remains to be seen.
The other thing is you know, including Medicare, because I'm having to deal with this with my father. Medicare insurance wants to do all kinds of stupid things, like if you're who they think your primary care physician is, what you have to declare. Who declares your primary care physician? What if you live 6 months in Florida and 6 months in Michigan or Ohio or New York or whatever?
I don't even have one.
Me either. I've not had one since I was a kid.
Yeah, and, it's been a long time for me.
They have to get referrals. I mean, you know, elderly people, they get referrals because they start to have issues that are age-based.
But again, that's a part of the layers of bureaucracy that just adds to the cost of
the other thing is there needs to be, and I hate to say this because I hate regulation, but there needs to be laws around what insurance companies and or medical groups that include things like these mega hospital association things can do and can't do. They need to be regulated, but people don't need to be regulated.
Have you seen what's going on here in Ohio with medical transparency?
Oh, yeah. The lack of?
The state legislature passed a law, and now the big conglomerate healthcare companies here are suing to hide how much stuff costs.
Yeah.
I just...
Look at one of the biggest companies.
Because... Unfortunately, their margin position on a lot of what it costs is huge. I wish I could get away with 200-300% margin.
You know who
has
the most employees in downtown Dayton? What
there's
company? You heard of CareSource?
Yes.
Yeah.
All they do is handle.
So if you listen, Paul, didn't you listen to our last one?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
We mentioned.
Did we talk about that?
Well, we didn't talk about CareSource in specific, but we said in Dayton, Ohio, and maybe this was a conversation we had when we were doing the podcast but didn't get on air. In Dayton, Ohio, there's three employers. You can either work in the trucking industry, you can work in the medical industry, or you can work at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
And that's it.
And that's it.
Yeah. Good point.
And CareSource, is that number one. And then you got to look at KMC, and you got to look at Premier Health. Those are the only three medical provider groups in the area. They all, if you don't work for one of the three, you don't work in that industry.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
You know?
Yeah.
And
working in retail.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you work in retail or you work in some service industry that supports those people who are working in those industries. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. And the sad part is CareSource is actually, I think from a medical perspective, they're like one of the top three in the state.
Okay, that's what they're the number one Medicaid provider in the state.
Yeah,
yeah.
for a Medicaid plan.
They're like a broker or something, aren't they? Just like they handle kind of a middleman type.
Yep. I actually have a buddy who works in IT at CareSource.
You know, talking about regulations, I thought it was interesting when I saw the guys that were going to take over for Trump, and he's bringing the big guys off Wall Street for Treasury and maybe Commerce. Big Wall Street guys. I saw them on CNBC the other day, and the one guy I thought made a great comment. He said, you wouldn't walk into any middle-sized bank in this country, and when there are more compliance officers than loan officers, we got a problem.
Absolutely.
And he's like, that's any bank you can walk in these days.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the level of bureaucracy that has been created in this country. More people in a bank trying to solve regulations than money.
Well, and you know, and so, you know, I'm not a fan of the Federal Reserve. It was something that our founding fathers, it was a split issue. You had Alexander Hamilton and a whole bunch of these guys on one side who wanted a national banking system, like the Bank of England and the Bank of Scotland. And then you had George Washington and others on the other side going, we don't want that. That was part of the issue, you know. And I lean to the George Washington side of it. More than I do the Alexander Hamilton, but even the current policies that's going on at the Federal Reserve right now are twofold. One is they're raising interest rates because of two reasons. One, spending is up. You know, people are feeling more comfortable economically, so they're spending more money. And it was, oddly enough, it was a boon to the Christmas season. This year, even over the previous year, which was a boon for that year's economy in 2015, but they don't have if we have another economic crisis, the Federal Reserve, what they were supposed to have been doing for the last 4 to 6 years was bringing the interest rates up so that they would have a 3.25% nominal interest rate that they could lower if we had another economic.
They've been too scared to do it.
Well, no, they've been playing with other economic ideas that they can control with. And part of it too is they were in cahoots with the outgoing administration because if you kept interest rates low, it meant, you know, at least it sounded good politically. Oh, you know, interest rates were the lowest they were, and
well, that's
and that's fine, but nobody can buy anything.
Optics,
well, yeah,
you know what I mean.
You got it.
We've got low interest. That's why they can't touch them. If they raised it, they create a huge crisis.
Yeah.
Nobody has money. We need supply side.
Well, you know,
well, that's why they were supposed to raise it by like a quarter of a point every quarter.
Yeah.
And then eventually, by the time we got to where we are now, it would be at a rate where we would still have a stable economy, yet our money is actually worth something.
Yeah.
Which right now I'm not real sure it is.
It's kind of crazy to see.
It is. Well, I mean, because of last quarter and the fact that we were spending, our money versus foreign currency is doing really well, which is causing issues because those foreign markets who were doing well for a few years prior to that, not doing so well now. They're having their recessions, and you know.
But the Federal Reserve, we could do a whole show on that, because that whole thing is
the
interesting.
Whole
if you ever sit and watch, like, there's lots of good YouTube videos
you ever
on
talk
the Federal
about,
Reserve. The banks created it. It was created by bankers.
Yeah.
To regulate themselves.
Well, okay, hi, I work for Congress. Yeah. I would like to vote myself a raise this year.
I will say this off the record. They're one of our customers, and they do not operate like any other government agency. They basically don't answer to anyone.
No, they don't. They have no oversight.
And they buy completely differently than all of our other government
customers. Well, they actually spend money right now.
Yeah.
Of course, they make it.
Oh, yeah, they do. We do quite well off
from
them, actually.
Theoretically.
But, you know.
Yeah, I hate to say it. CBO is a big customer of mine, and that's a congressional budget office. They never have freaking money.
Well, it's because there's oversight over there.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's bipartisan oversight, so you know that ain't getting anywhere.
But you know, and let's take this another thing. So I mentioned this. So Macy's is going to close 68 stores and lay off about 10,000 people. Even though the economy rebounded and you had huge sales from the pretty much from the middle of November through the end of the year, Macy's is losing money. Now, part of that is you're talking about traditional, and I don't know why this fascinates me from an economic standpoint, but it almost fascinates me as much as technology. But I did a whole bunch of research just because I wanted to understand the difference between, you know, a Macy's versus a JCPenney's versus a Target versus a Woolworths versus, because there's a history there on how that all worked and why we call things the department stores and we call other stores discount stores. And we don't tend to use that terminology now, but that terminology,
dime stores.
Well, yeah, that terminology exists, particularly from a business and economic standpoint. But it all has to do with the cost of merchandise and how many times they turn their merchandise over in a year. Meaning, you know, you change your merchandise. And department stores, obviously we have departments because you have the men's department, ladies department, home goods, toys, whatever. But they don't turn their merchandise over more than four times a year. Stores like Target and Walmart turn their merchandise, traditionally, they turn their merchandise over 12 times a year, about once a month. But lately, they've been turning, some of these discount stores and chains will turn 18 to 24 times in a year. So that means every 2 weeks, they're changing their merchandise. And you know, and discounting the previous merchandise that they had. But part of that's because with the manufacturing of a lot of consumer goods, and I'm not talking electronics, I'm talking about clothing and, you know, Tupperware and, you know, the stuff that you just use on a day-to-day basis, has, where it's so cheap to manufacture that, not only in China, but in Brazil and India and other places, it's become throwaway. And that, you could have a whole discussion on this whole throwaway economy in regards to the environment. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, why would you go to Macy's to buy a KitchenAid mixer? You can probably get it cheaper at Walmart or Target, or find it even at TJ Maxx.
Maybe. Well, yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I mean, all these competitors now that are up.
Like, exactly. And they talk about one of the big things that discount stores and why you're seeing this 18 to 24 turns of merchandise every year is because of what they call throwaway fashion. You know, you go into Walmart or Target, and you know, you spend 10 or 15 bucks and you get an outfit, but the outfit's not made well enough that it's going to last you more than a couple of washes, so it goes to Goodwill, because that's what happens with all that stuff, and they go back and they buy more stuff so that, you know, people stay in fashion. But they're, in reality, they're saving a lot of money versus what you would spend at your traditional department stores. And oddly enough, places like Kohl's, who've always been considered a discount department store from an economic standpoint, the quality of goods, how many times they turn, because they turn their merchandise more often than a traditional department store, they posted a loss this quarter. You're talking the holiday quarter that, you know, they make, places like Macy's and Walmart and Target and Kohl's, and they make almost 70% of their profits, 60 to 70% of their profits from November, or it's the quarter that starts October 1st and ends December 31st. But usually it's from November 1st until, you know, and when you're talking about some of these, because, you know, as the free market system does, and it should work, you know, you're going to see a consolidation of these things. Either people buy it, people who are failing out, which is what Macy's has done. They bought Lazarus and Shillito Rikes and a whole bunch of other federated, you know, the federated department stores.
Right.
So there's not many of those standing left in the world. And you're looking at a consolidation, and we're seeing a consolidation again of where these guys are going to succumb to, you know, are going to succumb to the discount departments or discount stores.
And the higher end stuff that they carry is going to, I think, move back out to the specialized stores in places like this.
I think you're going to see that.
You know what I mean? You go to Banana Republic or you go to Polo or whatever. You know
the other thing too is that you don't see. There, it's hard to buy a suit. If you had to go buy a suit lately,
as a matter of fact, I have.
It's hard to go find a place to buy a suit.
It is.
I go to Joseph Banks.
So do I.
You get great prices.
Well, but, I mean, even there, it's hard to find a suit. Because I have bought a sports coat at Elder Beerman, which is a local Ohio department store. I typically go and buy suits at Joss Banks or Allen Edmonds, if you can find an Allen Edmonds store, or Brooks Brothers. Those are about the four people standing in our area. And if I went home to Lexington, they won't have Elder Beerman, but they'll have, you know, a couple of other places that are Kentucky-based. But it is really hard to go find, and the selection. You used to be able to go into a place. When I was a kid growing up in central Kentucky, you had a lot of horse money, and you had a lot of money that came in from outside. So we had a lot of Arab money and a lot of Irish money, you know, that didn't live in central Kentucky too. But we had Dawhair's, which was a local department store, and you used to be able to go into Dawhair's. And because I remember doing this as a teenager because I thought it was so cool. And go in and I'd try on Armani suits.
Jeez.
You know?
Because they were catering to
the
sheik that had its Arabian horse farm.
Exactly.
Miles away.
Exactly. And Dawhair's made it as a. They don't exist anymore. They made it. They even expanded all the way up into Cincinnati. They made it up into the early 2000s, and then they had to throw in the towel because they couldn't compete with the Macy's and the, you know, where they were consolidating all these other department stores. It's pretty sad. But men typically don't have this casual, what I would call a casual or a throwaway apparel issue, you know.
We ain't got a budget for that.
Well, I buy jeans. I wear the jeans until there's holes in them, you know.
I would be a minimalist if it wasn't my wife buying clothes for me. But
my wife does not buy me clothes,
you know,
because I'm picky.
First of all, I work at home, so I can wear the same thing for 3 days.
Oh, okay.
No one cares. No one notices.
We kind of notice here at Panera. I get you. Well, I mean, the majority of my wardrobe is very casual because. I too have a home office. The only time I dress up is when I go to customers and, you know, have customer meetings. Even with the CEO and of our company, you know, likely we're all going to be sitting around wearing jeans when having company meetings.
Yeah.
I
mean, think about how we dressed when we first started working at Right Pat.
Yeah.
I mean, we were wearing ties and.
Oh yeah, dress shirts and ties, yeah. Dress pants every day. Except for Fridays.
Yep.
But he goes to, that's what I was going to say, but they receive
email. At least where I worked, it was jeans and a Hawaiian shirt every day.
That happens more in the corporate world than you might think.
Oh, I know it does. I know it does. But I think part of that is driven by the fact that it is hard to find dress clothes and find places where you can purchase dress clothes that will last, you know? I mean, it's even hard for me to find dress clothes for my son. My son is skinny as a rail, but he's almost 6'4". You know, and to go find, when he has something like, he had to go to Miami University for a field trip, and they had to wear a shirt and tie. We had to go out and buy him a shirt and tie and pants, and that was a major chore. I mean, because he can't go to, like, your normal places and buy it for someone who's that tall. And that's
tall. How tall is he?
He's almost 6'4".
Wow.
But, you know, it's interesting how, and you know, you add into that how easy it is. I mean, I probably do 90% of my shopping online anymore.
Yeah.
You know, if it's so easy.
That's what's killing a lot of these stores. I mean, not only did I see the Macy's article, but I saw that Sears Holdings is killing off a bunch of Sears and Kmart stores in the Midwest,
They killed the Kmart in the hometown, in the town I live in, you know.
A whole bunch more are going on.
And it wasn't that it was, they're not, because they're not making any profits. They're just not making the profit margins that corporate needs to see to maintain their buildings and everything else.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean,
I think the brick and mortar department store model, I think, is going the way of the dodo. I mean, you just hit on it. More and more people are doing their online, you know, doing their shopping
well,
online.
Well, the problem is so where the custom stores, so like where the Apple stores and the Pottery Barns and the Restoration Hardwares, the more high-end, the Williams and Sonomas and things like that.
That's what I'm saying. It's all broken out now.
Well,
specialized.
They're specialized. Yeah. But two, they become showrooms for their online businesses.
Yeah.
And they realize that people still do want to see and touch things, but they know they don't need to maintain huge inventories at these places. I mean, they know they're going to get people who are going to come in and buy stuff,
yeah.
So they have to have inventory, but they're not maintaining. You know, you go to the Apple store, I guarantee you, you go in the back and there's not 1,000 Macs in their storeroom, you know.
If it gets down to the point where you can go to a store, order it online, and have one of those Amazon drones drop the thing off before I get home, that's the way I'm going to shop.
Oh, absolutely.
I guarantee it.
Well, it's convenient. You know, I live in a rural area, so I don't want to leave.
Well, that's what I'm
saying.
The
Walmart's close, the Kroger's is close, but everything else, I got to drive a while to get to.
We used to always drive to Best Buy, like on the whim.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm going down there tonight to get this. Now it's like, just order it online. It'll be here in 2 days.
Exactly.
You know?
Is it so important that I can't get it in 2 days? Well, and even on Amazon, like my wife needed a date stamp, and it could only be a certain width. So we looked at a couple places, and it was like, nobody has it as small as she needs it, so I'm just going to order it. She needed it like the next day. Okay, so the convenience cost me an extra $4 to have it shipped overnight. You know?
Yeah.
If you can't wait next day to get it, do you really need it?
Exactly.
You know,
well, I don't know. I guess it kind of depends on what it is. Now, I've been dealing with this water heater at home, and let me tell you, I need that part right now.
Well, that's an exception.
That's mission critical.
That's your quarter case. Yeah. You can't hear, we're doing air quotes.
No.
But yeah, I mean, you know, that's kind of a... I think you see more and more of it. Every year as we go by, and I think we're going to see some things because you're starting to see, like Amazon of the Pacific Northwest, where they're headquartered, has put out a grocery store where there are people there to help you, but very few employees. There's nobody to check you out because when you go in, the Amazon app on your phone says, hey, you're in here, and you just scan everything yourself, and it's billed to your Amazon.
They're starting to do that at Sam's Clubs now, too.
Yeah. Well, you have the self-checkout.
Well, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but I'm saying now they're saying you can scan this stuff in and you don't have to go through the checkout line at all.
Yeah.
At Sam's. So we're starting to see that in more and more places.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. You know, I'm going to loop this back around to our political discussion again. So we went off on economics, now we're going back to political. So all the jobs that, you know, how many jobs were added to the job sector by Obama, supposedly?
That depends on who you talk to.
And how you count.
Yeah.
Because there are multiple ways of counting how jobs were created, how many jobs were lost, and even the unemployment rate is a fishy.
Oh, yeah, it's
fishy
very fishy.
And then when they take people who they say won't be reentering the job market and they don't count
so
them.
So this is like, is a gigabyte 1,000 megabytes or 1,024 megabytes? Okay, it's funny math. So, but let's go with the assumption what we used to call the marketing number, which is a gigabyte is 1,000 megabytes. So he added, what was it? I know you know the number that
actually,
media has been speed.
I don't have the number off the top of my head.
I don't know what the number
because
is.
I get so infuriated with these conversations because it's like it's totally bogus.
Yeah.
But we looked at when you look at the breakdown of the jobs, it was all unskilled labor jobs that were brought in.
Well, not only that, I wouldn't have a problem with that if they were full-time jobs. They're not.
But they're not,
part-time
exactly.
Jobs, and they're not, these are minimum wage jobs.
Yeah, they're,
at
they're
best.
Just not
it's no wonder they're fighting for $15 minimum wage.
Yeah.
That's the only job you can get.
Yep.
Bingo. But you know, I think that's also leading to this disposable apparel and everything else because it's what they can afford. You know, and you know, when you look at those types of jobs, usually they provide you a golf shirt of some sort that's the company shirt that you have to wear. You have to buy either tan or black pants. It's true. Mm-hmm. You know? And so, of course, it's a throwaway economy. I don't know if you guys have been watching this. It's a new sci-fi show they just started called Incorporated.
I watched an episode the other day. I couldn't make it all the way through. I fell asleep.
It is kind of a... I think it's a good show. It is not super action oriented. There are periods of action, but most of it is really intellectual.
What's the
premise of the show is it's like 2050 or some 2070. This is the part that I think is kind of stupid because there's been so many, but we have an economic crisis in the world caused by environmental factors because humanity. The concept is that, like, all the coastal cities have flooded, and so you had these what they called environmental refugees, where people had to go in the middle of America, and it changed the global weather patterns, and so all the fertile areas in the world are now deserts, and so corporations ended up taking over and creating these like oases and all of this, and so there's. You have like the corporate areas, and then outside of the corporate are the ones where you're. They know they need people who are skilled or semi-skilled labor, and so they have these what they call red zones outside the corporate areas, and then anything outside of the red zone is, the wild, wild west. And, water costs $15 a glass and things like that. That's the kind of economic mentality, though, that would drive water costing $15 a glass.
Government can do that entirely on their own.
Yes.
You don't need an environmental disaster to get $15 a glass water. You just need a government that's out of control, and we're not far from that.
Yeah.
As we are.
Absolutely. Okay, let's switch to something more tech-oriented.
Thank God.
Matt's getting a little riled up over here. Okay, you got to say it.
I was just looking up the corporate because I had never heard of it. It's on Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
It says it was the producers are Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
Yeah, it's a pretty good show, actually.
And that tells you everything you need to know about it, by the way.
That's why I fell asleep.
Matt can't read without taking his shoes off.
Working hard. Hardly working.
Math is hard.
Math is hard.
So, there's been a lot of talk about, AI and self-driving cars. We've seen Uber pull theirs out of California because they didn't get official approval and didn't feel like it was worth going through the approval process, but they still have them operating in, like, Philly and Pittsburgh and a couple other East Coast places. But what has been more interesting to me about it, it's not so much the self-driving car. I mean, the only way a self-driving car, in my opinion, is going to make the roads safer is if all the cars are self-driving. And I don't want to give up the fact that I'm behind the steering wheel controlling things because that's the excitement of driving a car. You know, the day they make self-driving cars, the minute you get in your car is the minute your employer wants you to start working, you know? Because that's what happens on the East Coast. You take the train into work, they have free Wi-Fi for a reason, because your employer, same with the West Coast. Free Wi-Fi, you're doing emails and stuff all the way to work. And all the way home.
I mean, when you sit for a long time, it should be.
But what's more interesting to me is the computing power that's going on. These are literally supercomputers. Most modern desktop and laptop PCs are by... the teraflops and megaflops and they're supercomputers by those standards, but these are like the supercomputers that we see in the top 100 are being micronized and put in cars, and Intel and AMD are head to head in battle, Intel with the raw computing power and lots of cores, and AMD with some raw computing power and lots of GPU. And I mean, one of the cars that Intel is showing off at CES is it has this thing called a Go computer, and it has 28 Xeon processor chips. 28 Xeon chips, not cores, Xeon cores. You're talking 28 Xeon chips, and it's a box that's maybe 12 by 12.
28 socket computer.
And it has 5G connectivity. And,
and I think there's so many variables that have to be monitored.
Yeah.
And processed for that thing to work. When you're trying to emulate the actions that a human takes.
Absolutely.
You know, I know they say some of the problems right now is that they don't deal well with like construction zones, pedestrians, cyclists, all that stuff's got to be
monitored. Yeah, but and processed. You know, all that would be fixed when the robot overlords do all that construction for us.
Robot overlords.
Come with me if you want to live.
Yeah.
Amazon will be dropping parts off. They'll be building the bridges.
Yeah. Well, you know, construction has become...
Giant bomber-sized Amazon drones.
We laugh about that, but the reality of it is probably in the last... Construction, for the most part, had not changed through pretty much the entire 20th century. I mean, yeah, we had ended up having construction, bigger construction vehicles being built and stuff, but, you know, putting rebar into a structure and then pouring concrete around it and building a bridge and a road over it didn't change from 1900 to 1999. But in the last 17 years, construction has dramatically changed because, it's gotten a lot more, I call it the Lego-ized. You know, we build these engineered parts that fit together like a Lego block, and now we're building, you know, embankments and bridges and buildings, for that matter, you know, out of these pieces. It makes perfect sense that as we go forward, we're not going to need computers for self-driving cars. We're going to need computers like these supercomputers for construction and, you know, because...
The most interesting thing about construction, I think, right now is 3D printing.
Yeah.
As that gets better and bigger, we'll see more and more construction being done through 3D printers.
Well, I mean, they've got 3D printers big enough now that will build these Lego-like bricks that they're building buildings out of. You know, can you imagine one where you could just, okay, we're going to drive this 3D printer in and it's just going to print the building on the ground.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. That's, you know, they're already talking about that and it's already in its testing phases. So
you've got the manufacturing process and the construction process happening
at the same time.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I could see this being a huge industry to go in. And it's a place where you're going to see growth for, you know, the processor companies. Right now, Intel and AMD are both so ubiquitous in what they do, AMD on the graphics side and Intel on the general computing side. There's no market. They can't grow their market. You know, the only way for them to grow the market is to add another billion people to the world that need computers. And you add another billion people to the world, and you might not need computers. them needing computers is probably low on the food or the totem pole because the food would come first.
Yeah. And we're coming to the end of Moore's Law now. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're starting to see things happen. You know, both AMD and Intel. So Intel just released the Kaby Lake, which is
the 14-nanometer.
Yeah, which is, it's still 7th generation, but it's the 14-nanometer version of it. I mean, my machine has the previous model. But what you're seeing is that the chips aren't any faster. They're more power efficient. But they're not any faster, you know. They say that the next gen chips will have a performance increase on them, but we're not getting it like every generation. You know, it seems to be we're getting, they're either becoming smaller, more power efficient, which is a big boon. I mean, in and of itself, and then we get a little performance, and then a little more smaller and power efficient, and then more performance. The problem is there's. The power efficiency of the chips and the memory and the electronics parts of the computers and everything else are getting so small and usable, and we see these elongated battery times and things. The problem is battery technology is not getting any better. Chemistry, it's like nobody's a chemist anymore. How do we make a better battery? You know, or in Samsung's case, how do we make a better battery that doesn't blow up?
I think that's the definition of a better battery.
Yeah.
It's so funny to get on a plane now and have and hear the flight attendants.
Yeah, if you own a Galaxy Note 7.
They call out the Galaxy Note 7. Yeah. It's like, it's so funny. You are not permitted to use it on this flight.
You're not permitted to bring it on the flight.
Is it even bring it on?
Bring it on now.
I can't even hear what they're saying, but I hear them saying Galaxy Note 7.
Yeah, back in November, I changed companies, and my preferred airline used to be Delta because I live in the middle of Delta country. And so now I have to fly Southwest, which is not a problem.
It's,
I like Southwest. I didn't think I'd like the whole getting on a plane and you picking, you know. But the seats are bigger in Southwest planes for one thing, and you have more legroom. Delta's you get squeezed in every month. You know, that seat, the headrest on the seat in front of you comes closer to your nose every time you get in that plane. And the flight attendant gets on and, you know, does the spiel, which is usually where I fall asleep because you've strapped me into a position where I can't get up and walk around. And I'm sitting there and listening, and they call out, if you have a Galaxy Note 7, you cannot have it on the plane. You cannot check it. You cannot do anything with it. And I'm thinking, anybody who has one of those, I feel for you, man.
Yeah. Did I hear that Verizon AT&T won't even let them on the network?
Correct. Now they won't. Yeah. Any if they see the signature of that model, it's automatically. Now I do believe they're giving. If you bought it through them, each one of them are giving a. You can get like a free Galaxy S7 or whatever. My backup phone is a Galaxy. And it's a weird one because I just pay for my phones anymore. I don't rent them from I don't take the interest-free loan, which then inflates your bill.
Yeah, I'm stuck in those.
Because they won't.
Those are ridiculous.
Verizon at least lets you pay it off early, and they will let you pay it down in the beginning too. So like, you know, it's that cost of that phone is going to be $800. So they'll let you pay $200-$300 down in the beginning, and then you're only having to make the extra payments over the difference. But still, that's $30-$40 a month. I just pay it outright, and partly because you can't get we're Apple family, so Apple phones, you can't get the Apple Care through Verizon. You still have to go to the Apple Store and get it. So why not just go buy an unlocked phone for the same price with Apple Care right away? But I needed a backup phone for my dad because he lost his phone, and I wasn't gonna go get him another iPhone. So I went, but he needed a smartphone, so I went to Best Buy. And talking to them, and I'm like, and they're like, well, we've got this Galaxy S, and it's actually a pretty nice phone. It was like an S something version 3, and it had the latest version of Android on it that you can have. It's really weird, but he eventually found his phone, and he made me switch him back to his iPhone. So there was one thing I really liked about Android that I wish iOS would do. And Android will let you, and it's not for me particularly, but like for my dad, Android will let, at least the latest version of Android, will allow you to take a contact and make a icon on the home screen. So that you can, like, you know, put Chris, and I can have him call, and he can just hit it like a speed dial button.
Sure.
Apple allows you to do that, but it does it on not your main home screen when you're logged in. It's on your home screen as a shortcut when your phone is locked. It's just a different way of doing it, but I like the way the Android implementation is because it gives you a lot of flexibility. But, well, you know, that's 49 minutes. We've talked a lot.
Yeah.
Well, there's 33% more of us.
That's true. You know, I think that's the most you've talked on one of the shows, and
probably has been. Yeah,
I mean, we'd have to go back. I'm wondering if you even did a show in 2016.
Maybe one.
I know you did a show in a couple shows in 2015. But
yeah, Remember back when we used to have Adam and...
James.
And James.
Yeah, that's years ago now.
Yeah. Back at your office.
Yeah. Office. Yep. Let's see if there's anything else we should probably cover. Oh, let's talk about CES. So CES is going on. The Consumer Electronics Show.
Yeah.
It's really... over the years, CES has been...
Consumer Electronics and Car Show.
Yeah. Well, that's what it is now. And then the Detroit Auto Show is next week.
Yeah.
And then you're going to start having... Apple will have a couple of conferences, small conferences, and then you'll have the... What's Google's conference? I forget what it's called. And then Microsoft will have their conference here shortly. I mean, it's all... They always do it in the winter months because people aren't outside...
Well, what else is there to do?
Well, there's that. We can convince people to come because we're going to have them in locales where the weather's better.
I'll ask my cabbie at Las Vegas, what's the busiest time of the year for you? It's like CES. Most people in Las Vegas. I'm surprised with all the events they have.
So, I guess one of the funniest things that has come out is the Acer has got a 21-inch laptop.
Yeah.
The Predator.
Is it like the curved screen?
Weighs 17 pounds.
Is this one that's like $9,000 or something?
Yes, it's $9,000. Yeah. It's a gamer, isn't it? It's a gamer's box. And I'm sitting here going, okay, one, I could build a PC that would weigh less than 17 pounds. For less than that, that would do just as much or more.
Right.
For a fraction of that cost. If I wanted to game that badly, I don't know what the cachet would be, but I mean it's like that long. They show a guy carrying it, and he's got to cradle it under both his arms so he can.
I have a bike that weighs less than that.
I don't know that my car weighs much more than that.
I'm serious. My bike is like 17 pounds. It's carbon fiber.
But you know, it's kind of funny that you see. There was a period there. Probably 10 years ago when we saw this happen at CES, you know, it was, they were coming out with ridiculous systems. Now, at that time, a ridiculous system was like a 17-inch or a 19-inch, but a 21-inch.
You know, it harkens back to the days of us getting together, like at Orlando's, and all bringing our
PCs,
our big monitors, honking tube monitors.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
And setting a hub up in the center of the dining room table and sitting around gaming
all day long.
All the equipment we lugged around.
Oh, I know.
Oh my gosh.
Well, you know, those PCs didn't weigh that much. It was the monitors.
The monitors.
You know, we'd bring our 17-inch monitors.
Yeah.
And
took us forever to get.
I'm surprised his dining room table
didn't could hold the weight.
Yeah, it didn't collapse. Let's see what else is there. So this is interesting. So Dish TV, which owns Sling. Has a new, they've gotten into the, so they've always, you know, had the Sling Box thing, and then they got into Sling TV, which was, you can go on Roku and you can install the app or on your iPhone or Android, and you can subscribe to their
cable
TV
cutter.
Servers.
Yeah.
Well, they now have a new box called the Air TV, and it's interesting, because this one's not a Sling branded box, it's a Dish box, and it's also not connected to Dish Network. You don't have, it's a box that they're selling, like a Roku or Apple TV. But it, what's unique about it is it allows you to, it has a tuner in, a digital tuner, ATSC tuner, and it integrates all your Hulu, Netflix, Amazon, whatever, with your local TV stations. So that you can program.
In HD.
HD. And
so that gives you. The full package that you need.
Correct. If you're a cord cutter, that really... I'm a cord cutter. I mean...
Well, that's what I want to be. And I like Sling's offering, but I want to get those local HDs and do it simply.
Yeah, I mean, we do it just because I bought a really good antenna and hooked it to the house, but we live out in the country where we get really good reception.
Do you have Sling?
I do not have Sling. Oh. I have Hulu, Amazon, Netflix, and then the Plex server.
Okay.
You know, and with that, that's enough with the over-the-air TV. Like, I watched all the debates over the air. It's the only TV I watch that has commercials. Except for Hulu. I can't see paying the the difference to get the ad-free Hulu service, but I hate watching it. So I never watch Hulu. My wife and my kids watch it, you know, to watch The Voice and stuff like that. So I don't usually watch what's on Hulu. But I tell you, you don't need... I mean, oddly enough, there's been really good TV on your non-traditional channels. But still the majority of good TV, you know, Big Bang Theory and all that, that's coming from your ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC. I think the problem with cable today, besides the cost being too high, is there's so many channels and there's nothing good on for 90% of the time. They don't understand their market. And my mom has DirecTV, which is even worse, because she got the whole package because AT&T owns DirecTV, so they swapped her. Around here, Time Warner has the best internet, flat out. I mean, it's reliable. It's, you know, for $90 a month, you can get their fastest package for just internet. But she's supposed to be getting 15 meg DSL from AT&T, and I speed tested it for her the other day because it's awful. If we all go to her house and we all get online, which means my kids on their phones or their laptops or iPads, and we're trying to watch a movie on Netflix, everything crashes.
It's not consistent. That's
no
the problem.
And, I mean,
it's
well,
all
another,
shared.
She's getting 5 meg down and half a meg up at home, and I live out in the
country.
She's
paying how much for that?
She's paying like $40 or $50
bucks
a month.
Is it U-verse?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're also sharing that with television.
Yeah.
And everything else.
Well, and that's the thing. So DirecTV requires that to be able to, like, if you want to, like, you go to a channel and you want to watch the show from the beginning, all they do is stream it from.
So I'm told that U-verse, like, now that AT&T owns U-verse, they're supposed to combine at some point. I don't know. That's. I asked my installer last time. He's like, "We're moving towards one offering." We're being told it's coming.
It's awful.
You know? I'm like, am I going to put a satellite dish on my house at some point if I stay with you guys? He's like, probably.
My aunt had U-verse, and she had to have a dish.
Yeah, really?
It wasn't cable.
I think he said now, if you order it, you do go with the dish. Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have it, though.
And,
mine's,
you know,
just copper.
Like today, I bet her DirecTV's gone in and out because it's cloudy and snowing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think he said if you order U-verse now, you get a DirecTV,
you know,
dish.
Besides those services, online services, which is what we use the most of, and having the fast internet is great because we can stream, you know, multiple TVs in the house are streaming different services and different shows. Plus, we're online and I'm downloading stuff, and, you know, and nobody knows. It's like being on a really, back in the day, being on a really nice corporate network.
Yeah.
And
I have the worst package known to man, by the way, and if you ever get U-verse and don't get the family, whatever they call it, family 100 or whatever is what we have, there's at least 75% of the channels are the QVC home shopping channels.
It's like
horrible.
That on Time Warner too.
Well,
yeah, so you go through like 15, 20 of those to get to the channel, and I have no news at all, like CNN or Fox, anything like that, and no ESPN.
So, well, I got all of that.
You do? I don't have any of that. And I'm like, tell my wife. And she's like, I want to get rid of
it. He doesn't
TV.
Watch any of it.
But I don't get the military channel. I'll get a channel next to it and a channel after it that are all kind of the same sort of thing, but I don't get the military channel, which is just weird.
Huh.
I don't get it. How they choose the,
well, and you know it's different, but
packages
on the because like
honestly,
so,
I really want true. I want this channel. I want this channel. I want this channel. I do not want that. QVC can go. HSN can go. I don't need this.
But
give me that.
Here's the fear. So, and this is how it should work. You should be able to go to DirecTV, Dish, Time Warner Cable, Comcast. Build your own package. It's all digital day anyway. They can just flip switches digitally, and you should be able. But I should be able to buy a channel for $1 a month. That's what I think a channel is worth, particularly if I have to watch commercials. If I'm paying for TV, this is what I love about even Hulu. The commercials are really abbreviated, so I don't mind paying for it too much because
that's kind of the sling model. It's like I think their channels come up about
$1 a month.
Yeah, you could have like, I was watching like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on ABC.com. They have their commercial breaks are like maybe a minute long. They're 15 seconds a piece,
yes,
or 30 seconds a piece.
But and here's right my back point. Here's it. My point. So like in England, they pay a fee for every television. You pay a tax every year for every television in your house. But for the most part, their television, unless you're watching Sky TV or something like that, is commercial free. You know, the only commercials are in between shows when they get on BBC and say, hey, in the next hour, we're going to be showing blah, 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 and blah, blah. Or for you Star Trek fans, we're going to be, you know, you don't see the commercials for Dove soap and you know. The ones that irritate me the most, because it's now a couple years since we've given up cable. and because I don't typically watch over-the-air TV or anything with commercials have become really irritating. I don't mind things for stuff I like. Like, if it's a neat commercial, typically it's online anyway, and I'll watch it once or twice. Like, I love the Frankenstein Christmas commercial. I thought that was... how do you bring Frankenstein in, you know...
when he's singing out in front of the people.
You know, so what I loved about it is it was a Halloween to Christmas commercial.
Yeah. It transitioned.
And
yeah, your probably biggest annoyance is YouTube.
Yeah, well, at least 90% of the time you can after 5 seconds you can skip.
Yeah,
but you know, and the thing is the cable companies, I either if you're gonna charge me $50 a month for 72 channels, I want no commercials, flat out no commercials. What they don't want to do the whole, and TV, a lot of these TV networks do not want to do the whole. Build your own package thing. Like, I'd pay $12 a month if you let me pick 12 channels. I'd pay $12 a month if you let me pick 10 channels. Because it would be just the 10 channels that I want.
That's all you watch anything.
That everybody watches. Yeah. Well, what they'd find out is a lot of these channels would find out that they would get no advertising anymore because nobody's watching their channel. They exist only because the cable companies force you to buy their package, which means that they can go, well, we're on this many TVs because we're getting this many subscribers. And let the free market fix it. Don't, you know, that's the way to do it. But frankly, the television coming out of Netflix and Amazon is amazing. Like A Man in the High Castle.
Oh, the series are great. And they're getting better and better.
We just watched the OA and Stranger Things on Netflix.
Stranger Things is great.
It was phenomenal. You got to watch the OA now.
Yeah?
It's like the adult Stranger Things.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
What's it called? The OA?
The OA.
OA?
OA. And there's been a couple of the 3%, which was a Netflix show, and it's weird. I'll tell you what's weird about it. So it's a show. It's filmed entirely in Portuguese. Okay? Because it's in Brazil where they filmed it and everything.
Okay.
And it's a science fiction show. And it's kind of one of these dystopian science fiction things. But it's really well done. And but Netflix, when you go into... When you watch it here in the United States, it automatically comes on with the subtitles in English. But you can go in and change the audio, and they already have all the audio for French, German, English. I mean, you can change any one of them. And they overdub, and they did a pretty good job overdubbing. You don't see too much of the whole Chop Saki movie where their lips move and the words don't line up. But what's great is we've been that one we left the captions on, and then the English overdub, and they would say something, and then the inner monologue was the captions, what they really meant.
You know, you just reminded me of my New Year's resolution, which I forgot, and that was to go back and finish series that I never finished. And so I pulled up Netflix, and what always comes up in the top of my Netflix to continue watching is House of Cards. I started it back when it was released.
I
watched two seasons.
I haven't even watched the full season. I watched like the first episode like 3 times.
And I started on season 3, and I'm like enamored with it again. Of course, I went back to Wikipedia, and I like read, you know, the summaries just to get. I couldn't remember who the characters were.
My oldest daughter has been going through Bones, and there's 9 seasons of Bones. And this year, what's being broadcast is actually the last season. The new season starts here shortly, and that's the last season. I need to add it to my DVR to pick up over the year. And But, you know, even some good shows like that. And, I mean, even some stupid shows I've been watching. Like, I watched, you know, I grew up in high school watching Full House. And
The reboot or whatever.
And so we've been watching the reboot. Yeah. You know, I watched the first season. And it's funny because it's campy and it's a feel-good show. And it's something you can put on when you're not really needing to pay attention. When you look up, you might see a funny moment and have a good chuckle.
You don't have to pay attention to it, yeah. Yeah,
exactly. And you don't find those on television too much anymore. You know, everything either has to be a hit.
Stranger Things was great because our whole family watched it. We went straight through that.
Yeah.
And that was like lots of movie nights where we would have movie nights where we just kept watching episodes. And that was great.
But you know, that what's driving that? And I mean, and Amazon is a wealth of those types of shows. They've had a lot of great shows, even kids shows that have been interesting for adults, like What's Eating Gilbert Grape or what Gilbert something. They had a show like that, is similar to the title of that movie. It was about this kid and just weird things, supernatural type things happened around him, and you know, it was kind of like Scooby-Doo from a mystery perspective, but it wasn't Mr. Sanders, you know, in the mask every time. It was just weird things, you know, but they've had a whole bunch of shows. I mean, they got shows that are getting awards, like Transparency, and
Amazon. Right? Yeah.
Well, same with Netflix.
Oh well, yeah. I mean,
and
look at
even have you watched some
things up for Golden Globes?
The thing I've watched on Hulu, when I do watch Hulu, is Hulu has a whole bunch and even original British shows that are hilarious. Like they have a spy show about an MI6, and he was like an analyst, but they accidentally made him an agent.
you know, I'm not so sure they're not the best at making television shows.
But,
and not only that, but it's amazing how many actors, when you hear them actually speak, you're like, oh, I didn't know that guy was British.
Yeah.
I mean, half the cast of Walking Dead is British.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't even realize it until you hear him speak.
But
House of Cards was a British show.
Yeah.
You know.
But, you know, it's...
That's another subject. But
how are people consuming television today?
Yeah. Streaming.
They stream it. Kids go home, they watch stuff on YouTube.
That's
and
all they
watch,
do.
Yeah.
That's all they do.
My daughter, my youngest daughter, She brought it all down to me one day. She's like, here's my TV and my DVD player, and here's my Roku box, and all this. And she's like, I don't watch it. I don't need it in my room. I watch everything on my,
you know, my 13-year-old daughter wants to do? She wants to go see YouTubers. These are like the people that when we grew up, we wanted to go to concerts,
yeah.
Right? She wants to go to these YouTube events now because she sits and watches.
Yeah.
She follows these people, you know.
Some of those people, I wouldn't want my... I've got stepsons now, and they're watching all these guys our age playing video games and cursing and doing all that stuff. But I'm like, I don't know that I necessarily would want my sons to go meet these guys. You know what I'm saying? So I would just... I don't know. It's an interesting phenomenon, I guess.
It is. Because I'm like, I ask her, you know. I asked the other night, what's everybody watching? How many shows are you watching right now? Oh, I'm watching 3, I'm watching 4. My little one's like, I watch YouTube mostly. That's where she spends her time.
Yeah.
She's into makeup, and that's her thing. Like, so she follows all these girls that are doing makeup.
So does my youngest.
Yeah.
She has... Well, she's gotten to the point because she cosplays. Because she cosplays, she has become a makeup artist.
Yeah, that's what Amelia is. Yeah. That's what she... Well, she's telling me, I want to be a makeup artist. What happened to like doctor? Because she's following these, you know, these girls online that are showing all these techniques, or she'll be in the kitchen, like mixing all kinds of crazy things.
Yeah, we get that.
What are
going
you doing? She's doing something she saw on YouTube. You know.
Yeah.
Have you all of a sudden
have you all of a sudden been buying coconut oil?
No.
You know when your kid's into makeup when they start buying coconut oil from the grocery store. Because then they're making their own moisturizer.
They make their own masks and stuff. Yeah, they're mixing up things, doing this.
Yep.
It's a different world.
It is. Well, I mean, even the maker stuff. I mean, my youngest does other things. And I mean, she's like, I think we can do this, Dad. You know, she shows me a video. I'm like, yeah, we can do that, you know. And it involves building a simple electronic circuit and doing this or that, you know. And that's what they watch. But my youngest does watch shows, but it... If she watches an regular over-the-air show, she watches, she gets on the web interface of the Plex server and watches, or she watches Netflix or Amazon.
Yeah.
You know. And all my kids have their own profile on Netflix so that they can, you know, tag their own stuff.
Mine do too.
You know, that's the way TV is being watched today, is not...
But unfortunately, at least around here, you're getting internet from the same people you're getting your cable TV from. And unfortunately, in my case, I love my wife to death, but she insisted that I get cable for every room in the freaking house. So now I'm having to deal with that with a massive bill for channels nobody's watching.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I don't get it.
My wife's not that way. Because she's just as big about watching Netflix or, and we have TVs everywhere. Even down in the basement where the laundry is, we have a TV on a wall mount with a Roku stick. She listens to Pandora over the Pandora channel, and she watches Netflix down there when she's working.
We've got three Rokus, Xbox.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we can stream anywhere. Kids got their devices.
You know, I think that's another industry that is holding on for dear life because they don't know how to transition into the real world. You know, what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you talk, Time Warner, I think, is a good example because one night, until about a year ago, I had that stupid Time Warner phone. Still, they were giving it to me for free because I'm like, I don't want it. It's not even hooked up in my house. But, you know, there's a number. Because the numbers they would give you, I would get all these weird calls, and it'd be bill collectors. Is Mary Smith there? Is Mary Smith there? And I'm like, she hasn't had this number in like 2 years. So I just unhooked it, you know.
And I didn't take it out of the box.
Yeah.
But it's still in the box. I didn't. Well, what do I need it?
You got a cell phone.
But it's packaged in with everything, so you get it.
I called at like 10 o'clock at night one night because I wanted to bump my. I had the biggest package internet wise that they had, which was like 30 meg. This was over a year ago, and they came out with 50 meg, and I'm like, I want 50 meg, and I told them, I said, I want to get rid of their cable TV and I want to get rid of this, and the guy on the phone didn't try to talk me out of it, you know. It was the first time. He's like, yeah, I get it. I think Time Warner's starting to get to the fact that, hey, we're an internet provider. We're not a, you know, this other stuff is now secondary to what we actually do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that a lot of them will figure that out. AT&T is a problem in and of itself.
What is that company now? I mean, they started out in phones and telecommunications, and now they're
all over the map.
Yeah.
They're like a megacorp.
Yeah.
Well, they're trying to buy Time Warner Media because Time Warner Cable, I keep calling it Time Warner Cable, it's not that anymore. They're Spectrum because they combine with.
I haven't heard anything about that lately.
Well, they're not.
Right,
I mean,
before the election got really heated up. That was. I remember seeing
it
that.
Happened because all the trucks.
Timeline,
all the trucks that come out say Spectrum on them and stuff, but I mean, the rest of the branding didn't change. The funny thing is, I keep getting letters in the mail, and they look really official from Time Warner Cable, and you open them up, and it's them trying to offer me a special deal on a bundle.
When I was living in Cincinnati and paying for stuff up here, I would get the mail, and I would go through, finally, the bill shows up, and then I open it, and it's some assistant manager for bundling crap you don't need trying to offer me a bundle of crap I don't need.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why did you waste first class postage to send me this?
I know. I get one once a week.
That's at least.
Yeah.
All the time.
You know, and it's because I don't subscribe to cable. And I'm like, why would I need it?
I think they know that so many people love to do that. Well, I'm just going to switch back thing. And they try to gain each other's customers back.
Yeah, they
do. Well, honestly,
you know?
This is two-thirds of the guys here know what they're doing with stuff like this. I represent Joe Average. I don't own Roku. I don't do Hulu. My wife does Netflix, and I keep trying to tell her that she needs to let me in on that big secret. I was doing Amazon Prime for a while. but that's it's just too expensive, really. And, you know, I don't do any of that stuff. If I do watch TV online, which when I was in Cincinnati, I had internet and that was all I had, so I was going straight to ABC.com and watching stuff there. I didn't feel like I really needed anything else. But I think it's... Your average American still isn't that savvy yet. Well, and that's really what the cable companies are.
I agree. I think they're, for the most part, they're preying on people who are 55 years or older.
And then,
people
are. And then there's that.
People are.
Yeah, and here, you know, click this channel and rent a movie for $6.
Yeah, my dad. So,
which is crazy.
And they show up on your bill. No,
because my dad's got some.
Because you can go to Walmart in a week and see that in the $5 bin, and I'm like. Seriously?
Yeah. Somebody just hit this button and watch it. No problem.
And
you
watch it once for $6.99 and you don't own it.
Right.
I mean, at least when you're on like Amazon, you own it and you can go back and watch it again. But that's crazy.
Well, you know, the thing is, my dad was a cord cutter and he's 72, but he's had some health issues. And so he was going to be stuck at home for a while. He knew it. So we got him, I called DirecTV first. They didn't want to give him a good deal. So then went to Time Warner Cable and just added to his internet package because that's what his internet was. And now I've got to call him back and cancel the TV because after about 2 weeks, he's like, this is crap. Why am I watching any of this? Because he's watching all his sports games over the air anyway, you know, and he's getting better reception over the air. But the other thing that I think irritates him the most is you get that Time Warner, and he doesn't even have a DVR. He just has the cable boxes in like 3 or 4 rooms. So that's an extra $20 a month on your bill, just for the rental. But the remote on that cable box has 60 different buttons on it, and you only need 7 of them. And so he would get irritated because he'd be flipping around, and in the dark he didn't see exactly which button he hit, and it would do something, and then it'd take 20 minutes for him to figure out how to get it out of that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not optimized or simplified when he has a Roku box and he's connected to all my accounts.
And look how simple the Roku.
And he goes, yeah, exactly. He just goes.
It even now has buttons on it to say Netflix, Amazon, and
you got it.
And you go.
He's like, just get rid of the cable again. And he has it. He's going back to watching his over-the-air TV. Because where I live, it was $100, but I bought a $100 antenna. And the people who owned the farm before us had a direct TV. And so I took the dish off the mount on the side of the house and put the antenna on it and then used its cable because it was already running into the house.
Yeah.
I get, on a good day, now today I would probably only get Cincinnati, Dayton, Northern Kentucky, and Southwestern or Southeastern Indiana. But on a good day, I get Lexington, Louisville, Indianapolis, Dayton, Cincinnati, Columbus, and all the areas in between.
That's good.
You know, so over the air, I can get like 70 different channels.
You're in a good spot.
Yeah. So, some of them are repeats. You know, like I get several NBC stations and several ABC. But then again, it's no different than cable. You know?
You brought up a good point on those remotes, though, because they're just silly. For instance, the U-verse I have, you know, you got the digit keypad. Well, the HD channels are 4 digits, and you have to punch in, you know, 1, 4, 5, 0.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times I hit the wrong numbers, and you got to go back.
And how many of those channels do you really need?
Yeah.
I mean, they're like 3-4 versions of Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah.
In my lineup.
Oh, yeah.
I don't need that. Well, it's the same channel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the other thing. So, one thing Time Warner, this was the big deal why 2 years ago, 2 Junes ago, actually, so it's about 18 months, that I switched, was because I went to just the basic cable, the old basic cable where you took the cable and you plugged it into your TV.
Yeah.
And your cable-ready TV allowed you to change the channels. Well, that June was when they switched from allowing the regular undigitized basic cable to all digitized, which required you to have a box. And I told them, I said, no boxes. And they looked at me. They're like, well, you can't even get the locals that way. And I'm like, I have an antenna.
You know, I need is an HDTV antenna.
And I just bought one for my mom. The antenna that I paid, it's not as nice. Mine's like 100, 125 mile. They rate the television antennas today by the miles. I bought a 90 mile antenna for my mother for $39.99.
So now this is per device though, right? Or how do you buy like one antenna and get it to multiple devices?
So with my mom's, I'm just going to unhook and take the dish off her DirecTV. And I'm going to hook the antenna to it.
But how I buy an HDTV antenna and use it for like six TVs?
Well, you could split that signal.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. How?
It's just like...
And do what? Run it by wire?
Yeah.
You can't do it wirelessly, right?
Well...
I mean, you could.
There are some things out there that do it, but they don't do it well.
Yeah.
You know...
Now, is that though the situation where if he's installing it on six TVs, are they all watching the same thing at the same time?
No, because... You can split a antenna, which is just a collector of signals. You can split that out to multiple TVs, and each TV will have its own. Because it's like a radio antenna. I can hook a radio antenna up to as many receivers as I want, and I can have them all dialing into different.
Yeah.
You know.
Just grabbing that signal.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of how you get it to multiple devices.
Yep.
That would cause me to be cut the cable.
Yeah, I mean...
Then I'd do it, but I want to watch Channel 7 maybe in the bedroom, basement, living
room. That's not... You don't have to watch the same channel. Each TV gets their own signal.
God forbid I watch anything and not in HD. I just can't do that. My wife can. Sometimes she doesn't even know if she's not watching HD. I'm like, you know that channel looks a lot better HD.
You know, I guess I don't notice it anymore because I do watch the majority of stuff in HD.
My eyes suck so bad anyway. I can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
I mean, literally...
I am really picky about resolution.
When
I know you are.
Like I said, I watch... There are four channels of sci-fi, and they all look the same to me. Maybe I have a crappy TV. I don't know. But
maybe you just have good resolution on all of them.
Yeah. Well,
yes,
I don't know.
Well, and that's the other thing. You know, they compress those channels so they can get as many channels on the cable company and the DirecTV and everybody else. And because they compress those, the TV channel that you think is 1080p or even 1080i might not have any better resolution than an uncompressed over-the-air channel that was 720p.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a big deal.
Now, sound quality is a different thing for me.
Yeah.
Now, I can hear something that sucks versus something that's, you know, a little more high def.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know that visually until it starts popping out the screen and assaults me, I don't know that I'm going to really see that.
Yeah.
Speaking of sound quality, that really surprised me when I bought an Xbox over for Christmas. Family gift that I really wanted.
Well, did you use...
My wife's like, why'd you buy that?
Did you use your Bill's employee discount?
Well, only for Xbox Live and for a couple games. But anyway, I went out and bought a cheap headset. It was the one that a lot of people recommended. But you know, you can plug the headset into the controller and you get the sound from your TV, right? Well, so I've got Netflix and everything, and my whole universe running through the Xbox. What surprised me is how good the sound quality actually is, because I was sitting there in the dark the other night watching House of Cards, and I could hear things that I thought were in the house. Like background noise?
Yeah, but it
and it was
the
stuff
show.
In the show that I would never have heard had I been sitting there listening to the TV speakers. So I was like, wow, this thing's picking up a lot of sound. It's kind of a cool way to watch TV.
Sorry, I'm sending an email for work. It's kind of important. But
man, work. Come on.
But, I mean, the to cut the cord and just do over-the-air television in this area, because there's so many big cities within a 120-mile radius, you're going to get a lot of stations. I mean, I think locally, just between Dayton and Cincinnati, you get almost 60 stations. And some of them are really good. Like, if you haven't watched MeTV, which typically shows, you know, older stuff, and there's the Western Channel, and then there's one that shows the old military movies, and, I mean, it's kind of impressive what's out there. But MeTV is actually, I think they've really kind of taken off, and they found their niche, because they advertise. You find them at Facebook advertisements nationwide.
you still recording?
Yes, we are. But now, see, now I've got Paul off on this thing. I'm going to have to help him set up his cut the cord.
Oh, I've been meaning to ask about that.
We've been talking about doing a video show. We should do a video show of this.
Yeah, we should. Yeah. And demonstrate the differences and everything.
Because I would find that personally gratifying myself. Because, like I said, it's not something I really... I mean, we can kind of have conversations about it. And I know enough about it that I can contribute some nonsense. But really, until you dig in and actually see it...
Yeah.
Don't really know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and, you know, that would probably be a good one because, and we can go through and talk about the different set-top boxes. They're all...
We can do a video podcast.
Well, that's what we've been talking about there for a while. Yeah. And the, you know, we can show the different set-top boxes, the Apple TV, probably the primary ones that actually have good support. So Apple TV, the Roku, the Amazon Fire. I think I have a Fire Stick somewhere in the house. but you know, show what's out there and then what you can get over the air and how you can get. Because there's some other companies. So I have one, although they've kind of given up on the product. It didn't work great in my opinion, but there's some over-the-air DVRs like Tablo, T-A-B-L-O. Mm-hmm. I have one of those. We could demonstrate that.
Well, I mean, seriously, you could probably break that up into a couple different shows. You know, hit the big ones, and then on another one, you know, hit some of the lesser-known stuff that's a little more obscure, but maybe fits someone's particular needs a little bit better than one of the big box shows.
Well, one of the other things that we probably need to show is building a Plex server with and without the HTPC part, probably without, but... You know, if you want a home media server, stream within your house. If you have a big DVD collection, but my wife likes having physical media. I despise having physical media.
I do too.
Because I don't like having. I want my bookshelves to be for books and software.
I almost don't need software anymore.
Well, most of the time I don't need software because with the app stores I don't.
Yeah.
You know, but
see, I used to do that too. Really. I was until I really bought into Steam. I kept all my games and software and all of that.
Yeah, well, it's the only thing I really have software for are my Windows licenses.
Yeah.
And I just need to consolidate those all in one spot. But you're right. You know, there's not enough. But I would rather have it for books than I don't like having the discs around. And we do occasionally watch Blu-ray. And we have a 3D Blu-ray player. And we have... The Xbox One.
That's funny. The Xbox has a Blu-ray app on it. Have you seen
it? Yes. Well, we use it. Yeah. And it works great. You know, and that's what we watch them on. But I would rather, you know, it is legal for you to, regardless of what the MPAA wants to scare you into thinking, it is legal for you to, if you have purchased media, to take your media and rip it and make a digital file. You know, as long as you don't distribute that file.
Right.
And then once you have that digital file, you could do stuff with it. Like have a media server in your house with your DVD collection. Throw all your DVDs in a box and throw them in the, you know, in the furniture room.
We talked about doing that one time. Remember that?
Yeah.
We were going to set up a business doing that.
Yep. Well, I think we've beat this to death, and we now have a future video podcast idea, or multiple video podcast ideas. So we want to hear from you. Please send us feedback at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's GIZMOSAPIENS. @gmail.com or at our website, www.gizmosapiens.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.